listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is Clint. It's Clint Richardson coming at you. Deanna's taking a little break this week. She will, of course, return to you next week. She asked me to fill in. That's how you got me today. So sorry about that. I want to talk to you today. I want to teach you some things that I've learned. I don't want to change your mind about anything. I don't want to, go against... All I want to do is speak the truth to you today. And unfortunately, the truth often destroys belief systems, destroys what is unfortunately what many scholars have called an active ignorance of people. There's a lot of crap going around. You know, we're finally seeing the crap that Alex Jones has been pulling all these years now that he's had to testify about it. Go ahead, send me your apologies for the years that I've been telling you he's crooked. It's okay, I'll accept him and I'll forgive everybody who said I was crazy. The warnings that I laid down about that guy. You know, I fell for it too. But there's unfortunately a lot of Alex Joneses out there. There's a lot of wannabe Alex Joneses out there, although I can't imagine why. And maybe it's the money, the $50 million a year he claimed to make. I don't know. I'm more interested in the truth. And I hope that you who are listening today wants to know the truth. And I'm going to start out today with some of the basics, because there are certain self-evident truths, in other words, things that cannot be disputed. Another word for that is things of nature, things of reality. God is said to be truth. So if you believe in anything that is untrue and call it God, well, then something's wrong. Well, what is truth but substance, nature, self-existence, self-evidence? That's how it's defined, actually. The name of God, Jehovah, is actually defined as nature, the universe, self-evident, self-existence, things that don't need words to exist. And see, that's our problem, is that we're suffering from a massive, massive inductination, if that's a word. We're inducted into the digital realm. Well, you think the digital realm is just what, virtual reality, maybe computers, the internet? No. Think about what a digit is. A digit is a number, a letter, a symbol, all strung together to create a matrix, a code that we're all stuck in. Well, what is the law? The law of men is called the written law. Well, if something's written, it must be digital. Digits, whether they're numbers or letters or symbols, they're all created by man. There are no digits in truth. There are no digits in nature. We would say then that God did not create anything that's not of nature. So, who created digits? Well, you know, who created them. It wasn't horses. It wasn't cows. It wasn't the trees. No, it was men. Now, while men are certainly part of nature, what men create is not. And what are they trying to create? Something, a term that you're all familiar with? Novus Ordo Seclorum? The New World Order, as they say? Well, I'm here to tell you that you're translating that actually in a way that doesn't allow you to understand what that means. You've been taught to hate religion, and I understand religion is a problem because it doesn't follow the Bible in any way, shape, or form. I get it. However, there's a difference between religion and acting religiously. One is a noun, a corporation, and one is a verb or an adjective. It is to act in a religious manner, which means a spiritual, unwritten law. Law of nature, law of truth, the self-evident law. Well, charity, forgiveness, that type of thing, love, all the highest aspects of the law of nature, right? Protection of that nature, protection of our habitat, for God's sake. Look at what we've allowed to happen. Well, that's all part of the novo ordo seclorum. You see, the problem with this term is that we don't know Latin. There's a reason they said New World Order, because you think of the world as the world. Hey, it's just the world. You don't distinguish. You don't think of that term in its proper form, which is a new or novel, in other words, patentable, copyrightable, something that is not of nature, a new novel, ordo, which means an order, and we'll get to that word in a minute. Seclorum. Well, seclorum is not translated as world, although that is certainly a synonym. Seclorum is secularism. Seclorum, secular. You see? Because we're missing that important point, we don't understand what it means to have a new world order. A new secular order. One that is not of nature, one that is patentable, one that is interruptible, and it cannot be defeated as long as you have put your faith into it instead of into nature, into God, into the universe, into the law of nature, law of God. And all these things all mean the same thing, and secularism is that which is opposed to that, to opposed to acting freely, to having liberty, which means you must be self-governing, you must respect nature and its law, and you must respect each other, you must show charity, love, forgiveness, all these things that would completely defeat the legal system. This is secular. This is the new secular order. What does secular mean? Well, how about we go to the synonym dictionary? Secular, as an adjective, is the characteristic of those who are not members of the clergy. Well, what does that actually mean when you say clergy? That means you're not part of the families, the bloodlines. You're not part of those who created the system. You're the goyim. Another word for goyim is national. You're part of the nation. You're not part of the states. You're in their corporation. You're in a status created by them, by Congress, not a status that created Congress. You see, that's the difference. And so, all throughout the world, you have the state, which is the people, the bloodlines, and you have the nation, which is the place where the goyim are kept in the open-air debtor's prison. That is the secular world. You'll argue, I'm not a citizen of the United States, I'm a national of the United States. Okay, look up the word nation. You see, what you're doing is you're mistaking the notion that your name is your own. No, you cannot say you cannot go from a person of the United States to something else. The person was created by the United States because the person is not you, it's status. You're respecting an artificial construct. You're saying I am the same identity, which means sameness. I am the same as that name. That's what identity means. Sameness. You're saying you are something you are not, and that is against the law of nature. When I say the law of nature, I mean, in other words, it's against, you're saying your source is not nature. Your source is the state. The people who created the United States, a corporation, to enslave you. Oh, but you're going to raise that flag, aren't you? You're going to be all patriotic. You're going to say, I love America. You're going to raise the war flag of the United States, the admiralty flag that indicates international law, not private state law. And you're going to love that flag. You're going to be all patriotic, and you're going to just, you're going to have Stockholm syndrome. Now this whole thing is set up as a test. You're supposed to pass the test. You must be governed until you can govern yourself. And in order to govern yourself, you've got to learn all this stuff. So what is the new order of secularism? Well, that's what you're seeing. That's the United Nations. See, this is the problem. You talk about the New World Order just constantly, but you have no idea what it actually means because that one word is missing. You know what it means? It's the opposite of spiritual. What the characteristics of those who are not members of the clergy, in other words, the government, the church, right? Synonyms to that are lay, profane, right? The antonyms to that are sacred, unpaid, right? In other words, a mercenary is one who is paid. The word soldier comes from the Roman coin of the same name. A soldier, you're a paid mercenary for that which enslaves the rest of your fellow goyim. Real smart. Okay, a natural object is something that is not secular. A conductor of something is not secular. The source of things, in other words. Okay, number two, secular is a characteristic of or devoted to the temporal world as opposed to the spiritual world. Now, don't get all weird and think, oh, that's religion. No, the spiritual world is referring to what exists self-evidently. It's self-existent. The spiritual world is nature. The temporal world, or the secular world, is that which is opposed to nature, that which man creates. Remember, man is part of nature, but what he creates is not. And if you're focused on what is not of nature, then you're a slave to man. Synonyms for the adjective secular in this case are mercenary. If you're a kid, a soldier is a mercenary. You can't look at the definition of mercenary in any dictionary and say every soldier is not a mercenary. You're a paid hitman. Material. That is secular. Materialism, profaneness, sophisticated things. You know what sophisticated actually means? You might want to look that word up. It means a device, something that's overly complicated on purpose to trick you. That's what sophisticated is. That's why they call these men of power, these men of words, sophisticated. They're spouting a bunch of crap, and so they sound sophisticated. That's not a good word. Mundane, worldly minded. Remember, the word secular or seclorum is translated into the word world. And this is important. We're going to get to that. Worldly minded, worldly and temporal. Again, earthly, terrestrial, economics is secularism, materialistic. The antonyms, again, unworldly, sacred, heavenly, naive. In other words, innocent and an insulator. Secularism, not concerned with or devoted to religion. Alright? But remember, what is religion? There's two forms of every word. That's a self-evident truth that every word has a singular meaning. It is not a self-evident truth that every word has a dualistic meaning. More than one meaning, and that's our problem. We absolutely know that there's no purpose for a word unless it has a singular meaning. But what we don't realize is that every word has an opposite meaning. And that's called legalism. That's called secularism, because everything in the secular world is artificial. It's fake. It's not real. It's not part of nature. It's not a creation of quote-unquote God, i.e. Jehovah. Jehovah is defined as nature, the universe. That's why it's specifically written that way in the Bible. You take the word God in the Bible, and you look at every time it's used, most of the time it refers to a king, a magistrate, a judge, someone with, some man with power, with a title of power. That is what God means in the Bible. Very seldom does it say or refer to Jehovah. It refers to words like Elohim, the gods, meaning magistrates, judges, kings. Right? And so you look at the Bible and you've been taught to think that God is this horrible, horrible beast that does horrible, horrible things. If you want to think that about nature itself, then you go right ahead. But all those horrible things that were done in the Bible, look up the word God, you'll find it's a man instructing people to do horrible things or doing horrible things through his mercenary army. Secular, not concerned with or devoted to religion, lay, impious, profane, worldly, temporal, earthly, profanatory. Again, same thing. What is the antonym? Non-commercial. What is the legal system? What is the nation? It's a commercial entity. The laws of commerce and international trade, international law. It is the law of the sea, which is international, laid upon the law of the land, and you were put into it through birth certification, registration. That is secular. That is commercial. That is the word. Again, heavenly, sacred. These are things that are not secular. And don't take these things, again, as anything but utopia, which is the, utopia means a well-laid, garden. In other words, a topiary that is good, as opposed to dystopia, which is a bad topiary. What's a topiary? A garden. It's a Garden of Eden. As soon as you bring the secular into that garden, it's tainted. It becomes a dystopia. You cannot help that from happening because you're not self-governing. You are tolerant, therefore, of all things against your non-secular religion, if you will, your religious actions. Remember, if you look up the terms freedom of religion and religious freedom, they are two completely separate things. Words are everything. The way and the order of words are everything. If you have the freedom of religion, that means you can believe anything you want. That's what you have in the United States, the corporation, the nation, the district. That's what you have under Caesar, the district, the incarnation of the district, the personification of of Caesar is the district. The word district means distraint, distress, and seizure, and that's exactly what has happened to you. And if you have freedom of religion, that means you can believe whatever the hell you want, and you can do nothing about it. You have the freedom to believe as defined in, I believe, Blacksforth Dictionary, which is, of course, reference to a court case. You have the freedom to believe, but not the freedom to act on your beliefs. This is the difference between corporate religion under the legal system and a man acting religiously, or what's called in the dictionaries, a religious man. They're afraid of a truly religious man. They're not afraid of Christians, because Christians are legal entities. It's a flattering title. It means nothing. It means you might believe, you might read the Bible, but you're doing nothing about it. You're not following the law, the doctrine of the Bible. You just say, I'm a Christian. Hey, all is good. It's false. It's idolatry. It means absolutely nothing. However, if you have religious freedom, which is impossible in a nation, because you're under the legal law, not God's law, not the law of nature. If you have religious freedom, the way that's defined, it actually means that you have the right to believe and to act upon those beliefs. In other words, you follow a moral law, a non-secular law. What is the goal of the New World Order? To create a non-spiritual written system of law that prevents you from acting morally. That prevents you from being a spiritual being. That prevents you from protecting nature against the corporations, including governments, that are destroying it. That is freedom of religion. But if you have religious freedom, hey, that's different. Then you get to act on your beliefs. And we'll continue this after the break. Stay tuned.
Starts with you and me. We all can be heroes. we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
All right, boys. Welcome back. The fourth definition, again, is someone of secular, someone who's not a clergyman or a professional person. Person means status, and professional means someone who professes to be something they're not. Now, as a common person, a goyim, essentially, the lowest possible status of United States citizenship or other national citizenship. Remember, the nation is Washington, D.C. You're not in the states. You're intruding. You're an enemy. You're a foreigner in the states. You're not part of the private people, the states. Those two words mean the same thing. You're part of the United States, a status created by Congress, and therefore subject to the rules and laws of Congress, i.e. the representatives of the true people. You are not the people. If you were the people couldn't sue you. Think of it that way. Now again, secular, someone who's not a clergyman or a professional person. Well, here's the synonyms. Common person, a commoner, a lay reader, a layman, a common man, a laity, or a lay person. Now what is the opposite? The antonym is clergy, clergyman, or unbodied, incorporeal. Well, folks, that means unincorporated. Unbodied, you're exactly what nature produced you as, i.e. what God created you as. Remember, these terms don't need to be taken literally as much as understanding they are the very foundation, basic aspect of law. Your creator is either God or government. Your master is either God or government. Your law is either God's law or legal law of government. You cannot have two masters. You cannot say you're Christian while following the law of man. It is absolutely ridiculous to think that that's possible. And again, if you're inside the matrix, you can't practice the law of nature. The matrix is false, and so is its law. You cannot be a Christian and also be in an artificial system, because God is truth. You see, this stuff starts to make a whole lot of sense when you take it metaphorically, as the Bible was intended to be taken. Not historically, metaphorically. Every term in the Bible has a metaphorical and a literal meaning. The reason for that is because you must know what a rock is, for instance, a hard substantial surface, a great foundation, in order to understand why you are the rock. Because you're the metaphoric, the people. The church is the people. The church is the rock, right? Right. The people are the rock. The church means people. When you hear church, you think of a building or a corporation. No, the people are the church, and a people that is in a quote-unquote corporation, a church, a religion, are not a rock. They are under the artificial law. They have no foundation. That's the whole point. Secularism is that which has no nature, no foundation. It is all artificial, and that's what they want you to be in. They want you to stop recognizing yourself, as you well know, as a race. They want you to stop. That's what racism is. There was no such thing as racism. There was only race back in Webster's day. If you look up racism, you're not going to find it in older dictionaries because it didn't exist. And Deanna has probably expressed that racism was something that communists used to call people, just like they're going to call me anti-Semite if I speak badly about what the Jews are doing in Israel. They're going to call me anti-Semite, or if you're a Jew, you're a self-hating Jew, which is a very interesting cultural phenomenon. It's all to defeat argument. You see, if you call me a racist, what do? I can't do anything. This is not real. There's no such thing as racism because race means family. Look it up. It means your bloodline. And what they want you to do is put yourself exactly where you are in attainder. You know the Constitution? Constitution says, hey, no bills of attainder shall be issued. Well, what does that mean? It means corruption of blood. In other words, corruption of race, corruption of family, corruption of your ability to bear arms. What does that mean? To provide your family bloodline. To say, I am not of the state, I am of the blood. I am of God. My law is private, not public. I'm not a commoner. I'm a professional. I am not common. I am not secular. That is the private people. That is the states. State means people. They're the ones who sue you through their government they created, which in turn created your status as a goyim, a national citizen. You know, that thing in Washington, D.C. that you fly its flag. Oh, yes. So there we go. Go back to the etymology of secular.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good. To live in harmony. It starts.
Welcome back. This is the Deanna Spingola Show. I'm Clint Richardson filling in today. And we're talking about the New World Order, or rather the new secular order that they have set up and that we have fallen for, we've been tricked into. Now, it's very important to understand that when the 1600s, when people started coming over to this new world, ironically, this new secular place, when they said the New World, they actually meant the geography. They actually meant, hey, this is old patch of land. While it's inhabited already, we intend to take over, right? So they actually meant the world in that case. But when you say the world and refer to man's world, that's completely different. Remember, in the Bible, right, truth or God is not of this world, not of man's world. It's very important to when you say the word God, you're saying the word truth. If you think of anything else, if you have an image, an idol in your mind, as anything other than the universe, the oneness of all existence, of life itself, you included, then you've got the wrong definition of Jehovah. You've got the wrong, what is truth? Truth is never the words, the digits that come out of men's mouths or are on paper. That is never the truth. It can represent the truth, it can simulate the truth, but that which is similar is never the same. That's a maxim of law in every possible thing in science and everything else. Okay, law, everything. What is similar is not the same. That's why they want you to identify yourself or say your insaneness with something fictional. They've got you then. So the second you say, I am Claire Richardson, hey, they got me. They got me. I'm theirs. I'm their slave. I am owned by them because I say I am their person, their status. I am the same as that status they created. That's why we're enslaved to the system. It's called a debtor's prison or hell. If you look that up in Black's Law 4th, I believe, it's hell is the debtor's prison. And yeah, that's what it is. It's called a performance debt. Don't think of money. Think of performance. In other words, contractual obligation. If you're in this status, you must perform according to their law and not God's law. That's the whole point. That's why they call it freedom of religion and not religious freedom, because you don't have the right to act on your religious beliefs. Don't think of, again, religion as a corporation. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the things you see on TV or anything like that. I'm not talking about the things they debate. The atheist versus the Christian, that's all crap. It doesn't mean anything. It's empty. It's not talking about truth. You're literally debating an idol, whether an idol exists, the image of God instead of the substance, nature itself, the universe. You're not debating ever anything. It's just an entertainment. Right? So, you're debating over nothing. And it's important to understand here again, someone who's not a clergyman or a professional person is a common person. That's what they call us, the commoners, right? We're not the royals, we're not the landholders, etc. So when we go into, when we understand the foundation of this, well, before it was the United States, before it was America, etc., in the 1600s, when people started coming over here, they had what was called congregational churches. If you look up congregational churches, it'll help you understand that. And basically, they set up a church, or what you might call a storehouse, and that was the government. That was the self-governing people. People didn't come over here because it was the United States. That didn't exist yet. They came over here because they wanted to escape the tyranny of their own land, and they formed churches, and the churches were the center of government. They allowed religious practice. And as long as you were a good little boy or girl, and you didn't do harm to people, you were good. And see, that couldn't be. You can't have a secular world that's run by independent, ungoverned, illegal churches. No. You can't have that. Because remember, what is a church? It's a people. But in legalism, it's a corporation. It's a building. You see, and of course, what does the Bible say? Truth, or God, that which is built by the hands of man is not of God. In other words, the secular world is not the world of truth, of God. You gotta look at it that way, or you're gonna miss the whole point. The whole foundation of law is based on this. Not some guy in a white robe sitting on a cloud, not a burning bush, not whatever image you have, whatever idol you have of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the personification of God's law. Logos. Okay, it's the law personified. In other words, you're supposed to follow Christ. You're not supposed to worship Christ. You're not supposed to treat Christ as God. There's many times when Christ says he's helpless. What do I do, Father? Right? Obviously, if God is his Father, he's not God. If he's helpless before God, he is not God. The whole point is that he's your example to follow. He is how, he is the law personified. You follow Christ, you follow the law. If you think of it as an idol, you think of it as a history, you're missing the whole point. And the law, the legal system, nations are built on that very concept. Because what is legalism? What is a nation but that which is opposed to nature? What is a legal law but that which is opposed to the law of nature, God? If you don't understand that, or you think I'm just spouting religion, or I'm trying to change your beliefs, I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you this is how the damn system works. If you don't want to believe me, you don't want to trust the research I've done, and all the proofs, and all the citations, and all the, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Don't listen to me, read my work. Go read a dictionary or 20 like I have. Go read the Bible. Go look up every word of the Bible and understand what it means like I have. And then tell me that I'm blasphemous. I mean, anyway, secular. So we're talking about people who were governing themselves and had a storehouse or a place to congregate and share and decide things called a congregational church. It was a building, but the building was not the church. The people were. Okay, kind of like the people are the state, not a government. The people, the actual people. You are not part of those people. You are common. Something that is common belongs to government. So, secular as an adjective, coming from 1300 means living in the world. We're on to etymology now. Living in the world. Remember, the world is not the when world is used in this respect, it refers to things created by man. Secularism, not spiritual, not belonging to a religious order. In other words, a people that practice religious freedom, not the freedom of religion, not the legal version, the anti-God version. That's what, you know, there are plenty of dictionaries and scholars out there have commented that legalism is the undoing of God's law, the undoing of the laws of nature. Everything in legal is opposed to the law of nature. That is very important to always remember, because when you say a word in the legal realm, when you're in court, when you answer a letter, anything you say as a person of the United States must be said legally because you have no right to speak any other way. It's their system. It's their words. Remember, they define the words, not you. It's their system. They created your status, and you're volunteering to be in it because you can't govern yourself. That's the whole point. It's a test. It's a prison for people who cannot govern themselves. Secular means belonging to the state, belonging to the people. In other words, something that belongs to man but is not man. You get it? That's secularism, New World Order. They have turned you into property by assigning you a status, you accepting it, and getting little benefits and monies and all the things that are against the law of nature. All lies. From Latin secularis, worldly, secular, pertaining to a generation or age. Now, you've heard the term novus ordo seclorum, the new something of the ages, a new order of the ages. Well, again, don't confuse age or generation with the true terms. A generation is something that is created, and that can be artificial. A legal law is something that is generated. We're in the age, the dark age, for instance, or the age of whatever. The Bronze Age. We're in the secular age. Because before us, you had kings and queens and kingdoms and people who were self-governing or who respected a king or queen because they were literally, as best as possible anyway, trying to be godlike in a good way, not in a bad way. And I know that's hard to accept, but read a little bit, and that's how it used to be. And then it turned into what we have today, which is kings that claim to be gods and therefore have sovereign power over you. Whereas before, men only recognized God as their sovereign and never a king, but they would respect a king who acted godlike. Big difference. Big difference. Of an age, occurring once in an age, span of time, lifetime, generation, or a breed. In other words, they are breeding us to be slaves. That's what they have done, and we are already in that status, I'm telling you. To bind, to tie, that is secular. That's where we're at, folks. It also means to seed, well, to sow. Mankind. Remember, mankind is not man. Human is not man. Human means something belonging to man. So if you say you're a human, well, that means you belong to man. The world, again, secular, literally translates to the seed of men, that which is created and sowed by men, not nature, not God. In ecclesiastical writings, the Greek old aeon, A-I-O-N, means of this world. In the Bible, it's actually cosmos with a K, was the old word that they used for world. It was translated by the king. And cosmos, we'll get to in a minute, but it that term world, well, I'll just go down. I got a lot of notes here, sorry. When we're talking about the word cosmos, which is Strong's Concordance G2889, if you want to look it up, some of those verses, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world. All right, what is world? Cosmos. But that doesn't mean necessarily space or the universe. It actually refers to, and I quote, an apt and harmonious agreement or constitution, order or government. Order. Ornament, decoration, adornment. In other words, that which is false, that which is a title or a person. The inhabitants of the earth, men, the human family. Remember what human means. The ungodly multitude. That's all of us, because we have freedom of religion instead of religious freedom. We don't have the right to act on our moral beliefs, only to believe in them, which is pretty much makes us all hypocrites. by law, we're not allowed to practice spirituality. Literally, that's the law. That's the legal law. The whole mass of men alienated from God and therefore hostile to the cause of Christ. World affairs, the aggregate of things earthly, the whole circle of earthly goods, endowments, riches, advantages, pleasures, etc., which although hollow and frail and fleeting, still cause and stir our desires. They seduce us from God, in other words, truth, in other words, nature, and are obstacles to the cause of Christ, in other words, the law. Personification of logos, the law of the universe, the law of nature. Okay? So we get all these different verses. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Well, that's saying go out there to the ungodly men, those who are seduced, whose desires are stirred from all these earthly things, those things that are not of nature, and preach the law of God. It's beautiful if you understand what it's saying. It's so, such a beautiful book, and everything in it is self-evident once you know the language. God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. In other words, the New Testament, the law of God is sent to us so that we may be saved from the secular world, which these people, these royal bloodlines have created for us, to entrap us, to enslave us, to imprison us. That's why they give us money and reality TV and everything Hollywood. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Which world is that talking about? That's talking about the secular world, the world not of God. That's Christ speaking. See, all this makes a hell of a lot of sense when you understand the meaning of the, of what New World Order actually means. New secular age. Get rid of God. Make people not worship nature, or for that matter, the nature of God. That's what it's all about. That's what legalism is, and that's what nations are for, to create you into a heathen, a goyim, a mercenary, whatever path you choose that is of this world. You see, that's what all these things are. Even the spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him, but ye know him, for he dwelleth with you and shall be in you. How is Christ in you? How is Jesus Christ in you, folks? Because it's the law. It's the law of God. It's not a man. It's a metaphor. It's logos. Logos shall be in you. Logos means the law of God, the law of nature. That's the only thing that can save you. That's why religion is full of crap. That's why you call yourself a Christian and you're not practicing the law of God, which is Jesus Christ, the personification of law. You're fooling yourself. I'm not just pulling this out of my butt, by the way. I'm reading these from the Bible. I'm telling you that every single one of these refers to this word, cosmos. That's how it's in the concordance. If the world hates you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. Well, do you think that's earth? Do you think that's nature? No, that's man's world, man's law. Legalism is that which is opposed to God's law. In other words, it is anti-Christ. It is a replacement for God's law. If you can just understand that, you can understand every problem we have. We'll be back. Welcome back. You know, before we go on, I don't know, this is a short segment here. I want to explain something else so that when you read the Bible, you can understand why there is an old law, an Old Testament, and a new law, a new covenant, a new testament, and why they are very similar but not the same. Once you not confuse the Old Testament and the New Testament, most of the complaints about the Bible come from the Old Testament because that is the Jewish law. To be clear. And in order to understand that, and why the Jews do not accept Christ as their quote-unquote savior. In other words, they don't accept the new law, the New Testament. They only follow the old law because that lets them get away with all kinds of criminal activity, usury, and everything else that we're familiar with, I'm sure, on this station. Right? They are a people. They are, I say, they have their own thing. They have their own church, if you will. It's one of atheism. At least 83% of them, according to the polls. So, you have to understand that Moses was a law giver. So Moses was a law giver. And Moses, the bust of Moses, is one of the many lawgivers that are in Congress. The busts of the lawgivers are on the back wall of Congress. They're never shown to you because they include popes and Caesars, and Caesar was a title. They include Hammurabi. What, they include Moses. They include all these Justinian, all these fake people of history. And, of course, Hammurabi was in charge because he was the offspring of the gods, which he fully explains. It's going back to Babylonian times. So there's nothing of the New Testament on the wall of Congress. There's only the Old Testament, the Babylonian law, the Jewish law, etc., going back to Hammurabi, again, the Babylonian law. That is their lawmakers. Christ, there's no bust of Christ on the law. And the difference between that is because Christ was the law. You're not supposed to, you don't think of Christ as a character. You think of Christ as the law personified into a story so that you can follow the story. Right? The problem with the legal law is there's no story. You have the dictionary, but no story. The problem with the natural, the law of nature, the Bible, is that you have the story, but you don't have a dictionary to go along with it. That's why I tried to accomplish in my book was to bridge those two things so that you had a dictionary when you read the Bible. You knew what the words meant. And in legalism, you have the story, which is your own story, unfortunately, of how you've completely extracted from that system. The difference between Moses and Jesus is that Jesus is the law and Moses is a law creator, a man creating the law. That's the difference, right? That's why the bust of Jesus Christ is never going to be found as a lawgiver in Congress, because Congress creates the secular law, which is opposed to or anti-Christ. What does anti mean? And why is the Pope the Antichrist? Oh, what does it mean? It means replacement. Secularism, the secular system is a replacement for the spiritual system, the law of nature. That's what it means. So yes, you can call the Pope the Antichrist because he claims to be the replacement of Christ. It's well known. We'll be back.
Network.
Phone is plugged in and everything's working okay. If it's not, I apologize. Looks like it is. So, anyway, we're gonna go on. The notion, and this is going to be a very important point here, in the ancient Roman, ludi sicularis, I'm horrible with my Latin, it's a celebration, coming into the age, you know, the secular games were actually the Olympics, they were called the secular games. In English, though, it's very important to know and understand what it means. When we're talking about what is secular, we're talking about in the cosmos, in the Bible, where it's a reference to what's called humanism. Humanism, humanitarianism, that kind of thing. What is humanist or humanistic? And it's a very important word to understand because we've been tricked, fooled into thinking that humanitarianism is a good thing. When in fact, it's actually quite the opposite. I'll explain that. Humanism is the exclusion of belief in God from matters of ethics and morality, stemming from the 1850s back, well, we won't get into that. So the exclusion of the belief in God for matters of ethics and morality. In other words, the exclusion of truth. The exclusion of nature and its law from ethics and morality. And that's where you get things like the Bar Association and other corporations, non-governmental organizations, governments, etc., because they excluded God in matters of ethics. That's what legality is. Legal has no place. In other words, lies have no place in truth in God's creation. So, secularism. Doctrine that morality should be based on the well-being of man in the present life without regard to religious belief or a hereafter. To secularize a population from the 1600s, early 1600s, refers to property. To secularize means to become worldly. Which, you know, we know what that means now. From 1846, it's referring to education, social institutions, and et cetera. So all the institutions that government has so graciously provided for us, from education to all the social crap that we're a part of now, social media, television, et cetera, is part of becoming worldly. In other words, part of becoming property of the new world order, the new order of secularism. Now, humanitarianism, or to be a humanitarian, a title, a fictional title, it means nothing, kind of like Christian, unless you're actually doing it. 1794, in the theological sense, means one who affirms the humanity of Christ, but denies his pre-existence and divinity. Now, the Bible, Christ is constantly, well, I wouldn't say constantly in this case, but a few times he says, how does he put it? Dang it. He was the father or the son he was the son of Moses. He was the son of this. He was the son of that. In other words, he existed in the time of people who died before he was ever born, is the point. Because he wasn't just, he's not supposed to be taken as a man, he's supposed to be taken as divinity. And so the Christian of today is a humanitarian, one who affirms the humanity of Christ but denies pre-existence and divinity. That's essentially what they've tricked you into believing. It comes from the word human, which means that which belongs to man, and Unitarian. By 1834, one who professes the creed that a person's highest duty is to advance the welfare of the human race. A philanthropist, one who advocates or practices human action to solve social problems. This used to be a very disparaging, insulting expression. Now we are tricked into thinking it's a good thing, just like we're tricked into thinking the word grocery means what? Groceries? No. Grocery was a crime. It meant hoarding things and then selling them at outrageous prices. Does that sound familiar? Right? You go to your friendly neighborhood grocer, who charges you outrageous prices and makes billions of dollars off your ignorance of words because you're stuck in this digital realm, right? So, what do we got? Oh, he's a humanitarian. Well, think about what that says. To advance the welfare of the human race. It's your duty to advance the welfare of the human race. What is a human? That which belongs to man. So what are we doing to nature? What are we doing to God? In other words, how are we treating the very thing that supports our actual existence, our life? We're destroying it utterly to the point where it's not going to support us anymore because we don't fear, as they say, God. Fear is not a bad word. It just means, well, let's just put it this way. If I am on a cliff and I'm hiking and I have a 1 foot ledge that I'm hiking on and I look down and I get that fear, that phobia of falling, that's the fear of God. Why? That's the fear of the laws of nature. In other words, what we call gravity. I don't give a crap what you think gravity exists or not. It's a word, right? That's the fear of God, the fear of actual reality, the fear of the law and laws of nature, the fear of truth, that if you don't act according to truth, bad things are going to happen. Well, guess what? That's humanitarianism. That's the Rockefellers. That's all these people you always talk about as evil. Why do we call them humanitarians? Why do we call them, what was the other word? Philanthropists. Well, it's not a good thing, or at least it wasn't until they took our knowledge away, and we are, of course, perishing from our lack of knowledge. And when I say that, I don't mean digital knowledge. I mean our knowledge, our connection, our husbandry with nature. Right? We're so concerned with marrying another person that we forget we're supposed to be married with the land. Because that's what actually supports us. That's husbandry. True husbandry. I mean, look at the way we treat our livestock. There's a lot of quotes. You just look them up yourself. But the way that a people should be judged or a nation should be judged is the way they treat their prisoners and their livestock. Well, I don't recommend looking at the way, I mean, it's really harsh to look at the way we treat our livestock. And because of that, you should expect to be treated the same way because essentially that's what you are. You see, because that's what people means to them. Their definition of peopling something is to stock, just like you would stock a river with fish or stock a farm with cattle. They have stocked the United States with commoners who basically they have passed laws that allow them to, oh, you know, do anything they want to us, including biological weapons, testing, oh, you name it, they could do it because we volunteer to be in that status. We're the goyim. I mean, that just means cattle to them. So it used to be a bad word, just like many words that we now accept as good. In the theological sense, affirming the humanity or human nature of Christ, having regard for the broad interests of humanity. See, that's the problem. When you think of Christ as human, you miss the entire picture. The story of Christ is a story of you. It is you who must overcome. It is you. You know, the Bible, it's so funny because the Bible says you must crucify yourself. Well, if that's the case, why aren't there more Christians hanging on crosses? Why is that? Well, it's because it's a metaphor. When Christ was crucified, it was his person, his legal status. Because he was born in nativity, which we all are. Nativity means to be to be owned as property. You're born in a nation. You're born in humanism. You're born in secularism. That's the birth process, the birth certification. So the crucifixion of Christ, again, a metaphoric term. The story is there for added effect, of course. But if you actually read the Bible and decipher the terms as they were written, you could compare it to putting up a public notice, nailing a piece of paper on the board, and actually says that in the Bible. Nail your sins to the cross. Nail your person to the cross. Right? That's what it's saying. He's giving up his legal identity. That's what it means. And all Christians, real Christians, those who follow Christ, in other words, follow the law of God, must do the same. We must give up the status. That's what it means. That's how it's translated. Of course, the king translated it in a way that you can never figure that out unless you do all the research. What is a humanist? Well, a study of the humanities. You learn that in college and education. One accomplished in literature and classical culture. Right? What does culture have anything to do with nature? No. No. Study of human affairs or human nature. Well, what is human nature? Well, remember, a human means that which belongs to man. So it's essentially the study of secularism. There's no such thing as human nature. There's the nature of man, and there's the nature of man that is entrapped, enslaved in legalism or humanitarianism. The furtherance of the human cause against all other life and existence, against God, against truth. In this use, the original notion appears to be human, which means opposed to divine. That is, a student of the human achievements of the pre-Christian authors and philosophers, as opposed to the theological studies of the divines. Now, when we say the word divine, it's kind of like the word word, when we say word of God. You got to understand that the term word, the term law, and the term son all mean the same thing as used in the Bible. The Son of God is the law of God, is the word of God. What is the word of God? The truth. Anytime you say the truth, you're speaking the word of God. Anytime you lie or talk about legal fiction or participate in it, you are not saying the word of God or not participating in it, because it's the law. What is the law of nature? Truth. What is God? Truth. What is nature? Truth. Words are not truth. However, they can simulate the truth, and that's what we call the word of God. What is truth but scripture? There are plenty of scriptures out there. The Bible is not the only scripture. This new old learning had or was credited with a tendency to loosen the hold of the church upon men's beliefs. Humanist also gradually came to mean a free thinker. How many times do you hear that term? Oh, he's a free thinker. Do you really think that's a good thing? Because a free thinker is most often someone who's influenced by something that's not really good. I, folks, am not a free thinker. I am one who is influenced by truth and truth alone. And in order to understand that truth, I must understand the lie. You must understand what is something is opposed to before you can understand that thing. That's why I understand the legal system and I understand the Bible, because they're diametrically opposed. You cannot understand one without the other. What use is the Bible to you if you don't know the legal system, if you don't even know you're stuck and trapped in it voluntarily, that you can come out of it, that you can come out of her? That is Babylon. How do you possibly have any appreciation for the Bible when you think the Bible is religion, when religion has nothing to do with the Bible? Because religion is a corporation. A corporation has no soul. Can't be saved in a corporation, right? Can't follow the law in a corporation, because corporation is bound by legal law. To be humanistic, As in the Renaissance or classic humanism, which is where you get things like the trivium, where you get things like lawyers and attorneys and all these bad things. And that brings us to the word world. What is a world? Well, the noun version goes back to the Greek cosmos, which we just talked about, man's creation, as opposed to the nature, God's creation. In its ecclesiastical sense, the world of people, sometimes rendered in the Gothic as the seed of man. Again, that's what is created. And when you say something is seclorum, you mean worldly. So the new worldly order. What does that mean? What does it mean to be worldly? Well, it means to be secular. Meaning a great quantity or number out of this world, surpassing marvelous and all these things. But most of all, it meant dead. Things that are dead. Well, a legal person, a citizen of the United States, is considered spiritually dead. Anything legal is spiritually dead. In other words, it's not of nature. So yes, that which is of the world is dead. That's why they call it a mort gage, a dead pledge. That's why they call you mortal. An immortal doesn't mean you're going to live forever. It means you're not in the mortal, the dead world. It's a spiritual concept. Of course, these freaks, these geneticists, which is another word for eugenist, the genetics professors, those crazy bastards, they want to live forever, and so they're trying to do just that. They're trying to be immortal in the humanist sense, not the spiritual sense. Death is a part of life. And that brings us to order. What is an order? A body of persons living under a religious discipline. Well, we know that the word religious doesn't just apply to a religion specifically. You can do a lot of things. I can smoke cigarettes religiously. I get up and have coffee religiously. Right? So legalism can be a religious discipline because you're following something religiously. It is your law. And that's why a Christian is not actually a Christian, because you're not following the discipline. You're worshiping the book, just like the Freemasons worship the three sacred books, the Bible, the Talmud, and the Quran. Doesn't mean they're following it, or if they are following it, they're following the bad parts, right? So anything can be a religious discipline. The concept of religiosity means you're doing something in a fashion that is, we'll say, an addiction. It is something you do without thought or without deep concern, without spirit, without life. That's the problem with religion. An order can be an estate, a rule, a regulation, or a religious order. So obviously they're trying to create a godless religion, right? That's the new world or secular order. It comes and it refers to rank, arrangements, routines. You used to call a row of threads on a loom, a sewing apparatus. You used to call it an order. Anyway, you get the, you get the idea. It also means a rank in the secular community. That's what order means. Command directive, to keep us in order. Military has honorary orders, fraternities of crusader knights, right? They wear the patches, the mercenary patches, and they pretend to have honor as they, well, kill people who can't fight back from planes, from countries that don't have, an air force, that kind of thing. A condition of a community which is under the rule of law. Well, what does the Bible say about the law of man? It says it will destroy us. The law is not a good thing. All right, man, we'll be back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, folks. Speaking of worldly things, you know, I used to be a sound engineer. I was a professional sound engineer and sound designer. I worked in Hollywood for several years until I figured out how extremely corrupt and corrupting what I was doing was. And it's funny because one of the basic rules of sound engineering, specifically when you're working on these big boards and stuff, is to follow the flow. In other words, okay, my mic is plugged in to the board. The board is plugged into the computer. And I just looked over there after a complaint was lodged against my my echoing voice, and I realized my damn board was not plugged in.
which is just such a idiotic mistake, especially for someone who used to claim to be a quote-unquote professional. So I apologize for the first half of this show being a bit unclear. My bad. Please spank me with a wet noodle and all will be forgiven. Let's continue here. I gotta say, you know, reading some of these etymological definitions, it's pretty incredible to think that this is what we've fallen into, this order, as is the new world order, the secularism. Finally, we get to the notion of sequence. The word reflects a medieval notion, a system of parts subject to certain uniform established ranks or proportions. And the word, the term itself was used of everything from architecture to angels to anything that had an order. Again, the threads on a loom were called an order. And it was a very popular word in this respect back then. We don't call ourselves an order, except that's what we are. As citizens, we are part of the uniform, or i.e. equal, equally punished under the law, in other words. That's what legal equality is. And we are the low rank, the base, the common, the general, that which has no attachment to the land itself, those under the law of the sea, the admiralty, the international law, because we're not actually on the land. We're on a giant monopoly board. It's called a district. It's called jurisdiction. And therefore, we don't own anything. Everything is property of the state, as I've read before from court cases. That's our problem, is we've lost, we're not married anymore to the earth, to God, in other words, to nature, to the universe. We're not part of it. We're acting as if we're not a part of nature. And that's really, really the foundation of legalism, is to cause that to happen. The foundation of this new world order is to take us, to steal us away from our spiritual release, to take us away so that we cannot practice our religious beliefs, our moral beliefs. Our family values, you know, the word family actually means race, and that's what racism has done. It's made us not identify with our family. How can you have family values if you don't recognize race, which means family, bloodlines, right? You can't claim that you're part of the free people if you can't claim that you have the same blood. That's how it is. That's what attainder means in the Constitution. We voluntarily given up our right to bear arms. Tell you what, I'm going to continue this. We'll go ahead and open the phone lines if anybody wants to call. I know it's been a while since I've talked to anybody in this fashion. Any questions? And if you disagree, I highly recommend that you have some source and that it's not just your personal opinion, because I'm not here to talk about personal opinions. I'm here to talk about all the research I've done and how this system works. When somebody, well, I should say, when I talk to you, I'm talking to you from the position of a judge. If I'm telling you about legal things, I'm not talking to you as a man. I'm talking to you as a man that has been roped in and tricked into acting as something he's not, a person, a status. And because you're acting in that status, you must follow the law of the creator of that status. You're using someone else's property. So that's how I'm going to talk to you. I know you don't like it. I know you like to hear the truth when it comes to, well, I should say the truth of the lie, the truth that, the truth, the honor among thieves, that kind of thing. But, you know, that's how it is. And if you don't know that, you're going to fail in court every time. You don't know the legal language, and you don't know the foundation of your own status, then you're going to lose every time. And that's, I mean, we are a bunch of losers when you really put it that way, right? Let's go to, well, I'll tell you what, worldly means secular, temporal, etc. Worldliness, a predominant passion for obtaining the good things of this life, in other words, money and things that are against the Bible, covetousness, addictedness, to gain temporal, i.e. secular things. A worldling is what we really are, is a person whose soul is set upon gaining temporal possessions. things that are not of nature, one devoted to this world and its enjoyments, etc., etc., etc. Devoted to the acquisition of property, that kind of thing. See, the problem is there's no such thing as property in nature. So if God is your sovereign, it all belongs to God. If government is your sovereign, it all belongs to government. You can't have it both ways. Can't have two gods. Can't have two masters. We'll be back. Public Broadcasting, and this is the Deanna Spingola Show. I'm Clint Richardson filling in today. We're going to go to Ray in Oregon here in a second. I just want to get one last thing in here, and that is the Webster's 1828 definition of the word world. And it's very important. I want you to listen very carefully because, you know, in the time of Caesar, in other words, the Roman Empire, Caesar's in the Bible, it talks about the mark of the beast, 666, actually translates to Nero Caesar. That's pretty interesting in and of itself. However, so the mark of the beast is the mark of Caesar. In other words, Caesar, the reason they call it a Caesarian section, is because you're forcibly removing the baby from the womb. And so it's called a seizure. So the word Caesar means to be in or under seizure, and that's what the word district is. If you look up the word, district means seizure, distraint, and distress, legally. So it's very important to understand that, and that that's what you're in as a surety and in bondage to this person, this status that you've accepted voluntarily. And your whole point is to get out of that, to get out of that lower class, that common class, that secular class, and become, you know, a man of God. In other words, follow the true law, law of truth. So the word world refers to a secular life. By the world, we sometimes understand the things of this world, its pleasures and interests. A great part of mankind are more anxious to enjoy the world than secure divine favor. It refers to public life or society as banished from the world, the real world, that is. So public. How many times have I said the difference between public and private? I'm sure you're tired of hearing it, but it's important to understand that secularism or the world of man is public. If you're private, you don't have any part. You know, that's what the people are, private. Private. All their lives are not on the record. They're not citizens of the nation. They're the people. They're the states. They're not citizens of the United States. Business or trouble of life, the customs and manners of man, the practice of life, business, get a job. Really? Because I'd rather work the land and feed myself. Is it essential? It's essential to politeness. Politeness and niceness, of course, are really bad things. If you look them, those definitions up, to be nice is, what does it mean to be ignorant and fake, I think, is the correct definition. So we're all nice, even though we want to, society is like a poker game. In a poker game, you pretend to like each other, you have camaraderie, but in secret, you want to kill each other. You want to rob and steal each other's money through the cards, and you got a dealer who's the government, and the dealer has a take, in other words, taxation of the game, and makes the rules of the game. You have to follow the game in order to be part of the poker, part of the game, right? You have to destroy each other. I mean, the whole object of the game is to steal from each other, to harm each other, and the reason that's important is because the only thing that a government can control is harm. If you don't harm anybody, government has no operation, no reason. So it actually wants you to harm. That's the whole idea of gambling, especially in poker, is to harm the other, your neighbor instead of treating your neighbor as you treat yourself. Imagine if the law said, love your neighbor, Be charitable at all times, avoid money at all costs, no usury, no grocery, and forgive everyone of their sins or crimes. You'd have no courts because forgiveness would defeat the courts. You'd have absolutely nothing. There'd be no gambling because there's no money. There'd be nothing of this. We would just imagine living in that kind of love, true love, not sexual lust, but actual love. I don't think anybody of us can imagine it because we've never experienced it because we're all trapped in the secular, new world order, as they call it, right? The principal nations or countries of the earth are the world. Again, the United States is a secular, thing. Alexander conquered the world. The Roman Empire. That's number 16. The Roman Empire. That's it. That's the definition of world. The Roman Empire. Remember I talked about Caesar, right? Well, that's the world. The world that is not of God, of nature. The carnal state or corruption of the earth as the present evil world. Course of this world, etc. The ungodly part of the world, number 20. And time, as in the phrase world without end. Now remember, there is no such thing as time. Money, there's no such thing as money. Money and time are the same thing. The wealthy pay for their crimes with money, and the poor pay for their crimes with time, which equals money. What is money but the labor of men personified or anthropomorphized into an exchange? So, once you know, the fact that you believe that the first and second hand of your watch tells the time shows how enslaved to the secular world you actually are. Let's go to our first caller. And again, I only ask that you do not berate me and the audience with faith-based arguments, that if you have something to say, please make sure it is sourced and true. Let's go to Ray in Oregon. Welcome, Ray.
Hey, Clint. Long time no talk. Or should I call you Your Honor?
No, please don't.
Well, I thought I'd throw that up.
Yeah, okay, good point.
First of all, Clint, I wanted to tell you that I very much appreciate your work. I got your book years ago, read it, wore out a highlighter on it. I don't agree with all of your conclusions. Of course, we can't expect that, but I do very much appreciate your work. I'm listening to you over there now and again on UCY now. Are you, you're on a hiatus from over there right now?
Yeah, I found that I was spouting off a lot of stuff but not writing it down. And so I decided I was going to not do the radio and was continuing with the book. And then all of a sudden I realized I got to do with what's happening right now with the quote-unquote anti-vaccine movement. I decided to make part two of Lethal Injection, my first documentary on vaccines, except this is about the whole industry, all the drugs and everything that's basically destroying us. In fact, in the Bible, the word, I can't remember, it's witchcraft or something. Basically it says we'll be destroyed by pharmacopoeia is the actual translation. And that's, what's that?
Pharmacia, right?
Yeah, pharmacopoeia, pharmacia. That's right. How we'll be destroyed.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you said something earlier about, livestock, and, I was interested in, your take. That's, come to me as far as how I'd sum it up is keep not lest ye be kept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of, where is your thoughts on, vegetarianism now? I won't eat, any of the factory farmed meat. I was a meat eater all my life, but I've had to come to that conclusion that I can't eat the meat that they produce.
Well, pretty soon you'll be having meat that's grown in a tube. I don't know if you've heard about the fake or the meat that they're going to be growing, you know, without life. It's basically cancer. Cancerous growth of cells that they're going to call meat, and it's going to taste just like a steak because it's pretty much the same thing except it's controlled cancer. And that's basically what's going to be the new meat. And I don't know if they're going to be required to tell you that's what it is. It's going to look just like a pork chop or a ribeye steak. That's the new, or a hamburger or some, you know, strange Taco Bell ingredient, right?
Yeah,
McDonald's, So
just
that's...
the other day, they Burger King released a in one of their restaurants. They're calling it the Unbelievable Whopper or something like that, and that's exactly what it is.
That and insect protein, if you can, you know, imagine that. So yeah, basically, and it's going to be 3D printed, by the way. So you're, you know, the rule stands for everything. So the answer to your question, in my personal outlook, would be, is it natural? Is it of the earth? Is it of God? In other words, of nature, or is it something man-made? Well, factory farming and what we're doing to, you know, injecting hormones and vaccines and all this crap, then no, it's not coming from nature. But then again, what are the vegetables? Where are you getting your vegetables? Because the same
thing.
Yeah,
you got to grow them from heirloom seed yourself.
The whole plan is to basically destroy all life, recreating it so that it can be patented, the genes in your body, and so that just like the Monsanto seeds that are going, you know, hey, you have Monsanto seeds, they blew in on the wind, therefore we're going to sue you and destroy your livelihood. Well, what happens when you have a cancer or genes or anything that is patented, since they now allow you to patent life? You know, you have Monsanto life in you, which is now Bayer. You know, you have our genes in your body, therefore we own you. I mean, that's what they're saying about everything else in the world, and we're allowing it to happen. So why would you not expect, as peopled commoners who have no rights except what they give us and take away from us, why would you not expect that that's going to one day, that you're going to be so genetically altered from the food, from the geneticists, which are eugenicists, why would you think that that's not going to happen to your children at least?
Yeah, absolutely. Your talk with Patrick Jordan, he flat said that they pulled a gene out of us. They corrupted one of our genes, so now we're going to have some of their products to remedy that situation, right?
Yeah, you know, I recommend also a movie. I just happened to see it one day. It was called Repo. There was Repo Man, and there was a movie called Repo Men.
Yeah, with Jude Law. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where, you know, they're, you know, that's one thing to be an agent where you go around and you take people's cars because they haven't paid their debt. But what happens when you have a heart transplant and you have a corporation's heart in you, a metal piece of, you know, a fake heart, and you haven't paid your bills, and you have the repo men coming and tearing it out of your chest? You know, that's the future that they're, I think, giving us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the answer to your question is always going to be, is it true or is it Memorex? Is it false? Is it artificial? Is it man-made? Is it altered genetically? So the only real answer, I think, can be, you're right. Unless you know where your meat, I used to work on an organic farm, and we actually had Arab folks come over and do their religious ceremonies, and they would cut the calf, you know, do their religious ceremony because the calf, the sheep actually was organic. It had nothing added to it, and that was so rare, and the farmer actually allowed them to do their religious ceremony there because they couldn't do it with any other sheep around this area because they're all injected or whatever. And these sheep were big, beautiful, wonderful, well-tempered. I mean, it was amazing, you know, as far as well-tempered sheep can be.
Yeah.
So
I want to just kind of, I've got a lot of questions for you. I haven't had a chance to, since I've read your book and since I've been listening, there's been a lot of things I would ask you. And so if you don't mind, I've got a little bit, if you've got a minute.
Sure.
Okay.
You can also send me an email. We can talk on the phone.
I would like that too. We did that way long years ago before you ever got on the radio, and I was telling you, you ought to get on the radio. Do you remember that?
It's all because this whole curse is because of you?
We've had our disagreements along the way too, but your entomology is pretty hard to argue with. It really is. I appreciate that as much as anything. And I, in my opinion, just as if, you know, I mean, like I said, we've had our disagreements, but I think you're the best researcher out there. And you go with what you believe. I've seen you. You've had to cut ties with people, and I've felt for you on that because I've also had to do it. You know, Jan, that was a hard deal. But I mean, what happened there? He got in debt with the IRS or whatever, and he started. Boy, did he start going the wrong way. You know, got Alex Jones on there in the whole nine yards, and
he get in bed with the devil, man. That's
Some of the stuff he's spewing on there, and I thought he was a solid guy, so that hurt my feelings a little bit too. But okay, anyway, so who is this character in the Bible, Yahweh, in your opinion?
You know, there's a great documentary that I highly recommend everybody watch. Hopefully you can find it. It's on YouTube, and it's called The Name of God. And Yahweh is, I believe it's a mistranslation, or it's something that was created so that it takes you away from the actual name of God. And if you don't know the name of God, then, you know, you can't really, again, if you don't know the difference between Jehovah and say Theos, which means God-like, or Elohim, which means the gods, the Babylonian gods, et cetera, or Archon, or all these words that got translated into the word God, you must differentiate all those terms that are used in the Bible, translated but purposely mistransliterated, if you will, by the king, so that you think that men, that God is always men, you know, that the bad things that men do are actually God doing them. But the only time that it actually speaks of God in the sense of the highest, you know, being, is Jehovah. And sometimes it says Jehovah, but sometimes it also says Lord or God, capitalized, all capitalized, that kind of thing. So that documentary called The Name of God is the absolute best documentary on the subject I've ever seen. And you will come out of there and you will understand what the difference is between all these different names that are essentially, you know, wrong. And when I say Jehovah, I'm using the sort of guttural language that dates back to the, you know, even before Hebrew, to that YHVH, you know, So I'm saying Jehovah because that's the easiest way to say it. It's not meant as anything except a term that has a specific meaning as described in all the concordances and all the old texts. And it's really the same, I think, in every religion, except that every religion has taken us away from that meaning, again, mistranslated on purpose.
Right. Well, one of your talks that I also really appreciated was "What is a Jew?" And you know, we had the former prime minister before old Bibi Netanyahu. He said a Jew is anyone who says they're a Jew. Right?
Absolutely. Which is why you had a bunch of black Ethiopians that came over to Israel and
awesome.
Said we're Jews. Of course, they forced them. Yeah, we're going to force sterilize them because they're saying they're Jews. Well, that's our fault. We said anybody can be a Jew that says they're a Jew. And that's why I keep trying to tell people, you know, the Queen of England is a Jew in the true sense of the word. All the royal families are Jews in the true sense of the word, which is it's not a religion. It's not a race. It's not, you know, it's actually the fallen people, the worldly people, the people of secularism, that they're not Israelites. The Israelites were a people, not a place. Right, so Israel has nothing to do. Modern Israel has nothing to do with anything in the Bible. There is no Jewish people except to say that there is a organized crime syndicate that calls themselves Jews or doesn't call themselves Jews but acts the part.
Right. Yeah, and that explained an awful lot to me. But I guess where that forced me to go was where did the originals come from? I think they usurped the name of Jew. I don't think that the original, you know, villains, whatever you want to call them, were necessarily Jews. They just took over their name and they became the scapegoat.
No,
right?
See, that's the thing, is there was no Jew in the original Bible. There's no word that was a Jew. The Jew, as far as I understand it in my research, are the Israelites, who were the people it was a people, in other words, a church, like we're talking about, that followed the law of God. And the Jew were the people that fell and became corrupted, worldly, secular, And that's why they're called the Jews, and that's why they're only in the old law, which allows usury and all these different things, because they're worldly as opposed to divine, you know, of nature, spiritual, that kind of thing. And, you know, this is not, you could say all kinds of things about, you know, anti-Semite, even though Semite means Arab. You know, you can say all these different things, even though their own encyclopedias say, you know, that there's nothing, no evidence that a Jew is a Semite. You know, okay, you can say whatever you want to shut down the argument. The point is, you know, there is no Jewish, there is no such thing as a Jew in regards to saying, say, Indian or Chinese, or that there is no Jewish people. It's a lie. Or it right. would be like, it'd be like saying I'm a Crip, or I'm a Blood, or I'm a whatever gang you're in. And the important part to realize is that the what we're called Jews specifically can have no nation. I mean, if you're a Christian or a Jew, you cannot be of a nation. And that's defined very specifically. You're specifically a, if you will, a nomad, or you're not in any secular government. You can't be a national and be a Jew. And that's why the Jews who are so-called Jews who are, you know, actually religious, which is maybe 15% of them, say, no, we don't accept Israel because we can't, we don't accept Jesus as our Savior, and we don't accept Israel, the state, because our Savior hasn't come back. We can't have a nation until our Savior comes back. So the whole thing is just, you know, let's be clear, too. Who conquered Palestine? It was England. And back in the 1200s, about 1215, I believe it was, England, the kingdom, they lost the kingdom of Jerusalem, which is what it used to be called under English rule. And it was Queen Elizabeth at the time, not the modern Elizabeth, but the old Elizabeth. They lost, the kingdom of Jerusalem, which was under the English crown. If I'm saying that right for the time. You can look that up. Just look up Kingdom of Jerusalem, and you can read all about the English rule. So who was it that defeated Palestine? It wasn't the Jews, unless you consider that the English crown is the Jew, quote right. unquote, the secular, you know, New World Order, as we're saying.
Well, you would easily argue that, well, you already have, actually, you said that earlier, is that all of royalty, all of these bloodlines, they are the true Jew. So here's the next question, just along that line, is where did these villains, whatever you want to call them, these forces of darkness or whatever, where do you think they got this knowledge, this understanding, this power
I always tell people to go watch the Book of Eli. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Well, what's the story of the Book of Eli? That it's complete apocalypse, right? Very few people left alive. Everything's ruined. Nuclear waste, all that stuff. And here's a guy who's older and remembers the power of religion, the power of the Bible, and he seeks the Bible, but he doesn't teach his people to read. Kind of like the Catholic Church always says stuff in Latin instead of English, because they don't want people to know what the Bible actually says, because it would say, don't be part of a church, a corporation, right? Don't have a false god like the Pope, who claims to be able to change the Bible or the God's word anytime he wants, right? So you've got these people who understand the power of religion, in a negative sense. And who keeps their people, just like in America, very ignorant, very unknowledgeable of old languages, which they still use. I mean, if you go to court, the judges are still speaking in Latin. They're just doing it in English, right? But you don't know that because you think, you know.
Because Latin is a dead language, Clint. Have you heard?
Right, right. It's the language of death. In other words, legalism, right? So we don't know what we're saying when we say it, because of course, again, we speak truth when we speak, or we try to, but legalism has no truth. So we're generally kicking ourselves in the ass, because we don't know what we're saying, and we're getting ourselves in trouble, which is why we can't ever win in court. So I mean, the problem is, you know, the Jews, so-called, that go to Israel, they don't have any knowledge. I mean, I had a, My cousin married a Sephardic Jew, really, really smart guy, really cool guy, had that darker complexion, and he didn't even know the history. I mean, I knew more than him about Judaism, because it's secularism. It's Talmudism more than anything, and it's you know, Talmud is their civil law. It has nothing to do with religion. So the whole thing is bullshit. The Jews don't understand that they are the goyim in Israel, those who go there and become citizens of a nation that shouldn't exist because their savior hasn't come back. So anyway, hold on, we'll be back.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Filling in, I'm Clint Richardson. As far as the subject at hand, I'm going to defer people to a very important book written by one of the preeminent scholars and most respected scholars on the subject, whose name is John Glad, G-L-A-D. He wrote a book called Jewish Eugenics. And the title of that is very important because that's what the concept of Judaism actually is a eugenics club, and his final, after he goes through and disproves everything that they say, you know, that you've heard, you know, here's what he says. He says, Jews equal members of a cultural and breeding alliance. Now, in the Bible, the tribe of Shem, Noah's son, and the word Shem means name, and so if you have a culture and breeding alliance, you basically respect the name. In other words, like the bloodlines, right? So they keep track of their heraldry, etc. And that's basically why I say that all the royal families are Jews. He says, he dispels all the false things that we are told or we think. Modern Jews are not ancient Jews. Jews equal the invention of the anti-Semite. Jews, anyone who says he is. Jew is not equal to race, and race is not equal to Judaism. Jews do not equal a race. It just goes on and on. And he just dispels all possible things that Jews do not equal Judaism. A Jew has nothing to do with Judaism. Has nothing to do with matrilineal from the mother, etc. Has nothing to do with any of that. And all it is, again, the preeminent scholar, members of a cultural and breeding alliance, which fully and utterly describes the royal families. It describes the notion of the right of return, etc. And none of this has to do with race, religion, or anything else. It is strictly a cultural and breeding alliance. And that's the difference between what a Jew is and what a Christian or a true Christian, a follower of Christ would be. Now the Israelite would be one, again, who follows the law of God. And if you fall from that, then you're a Jew. That's the way the Bible, at least the way that I read the Bible, that's what it apparently says. And that's why the notion of a Jewish Jesus, for instance, when there really is no such thing as a Jew, it's, you know, he was not part of the secular world, and that was the whole point.
Of where you thought they got their power. You referenced the book of Eli, so from the Bible.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So if you take the Bible and you take all the bad parts, there's a lot of stuff in there that people don't like about controlling people, about war, about killing people for doing really, you know, small things. There's, you know, so what he did in that movie, since he remembered the power of religion, but since before things went awry, and got destroyed, he took the Bible. He was looking for the Bible. He taught nobody to read. And all he did was say, go get a bunch of books, right? So they all went and they got as many books as they could, hoping that they'd get the right book. Because he wouldn't even tell them which book he was looking for, because he didn't want them to have the power, the power of free will, the power of the knowledge of God, basically, the knowledge of how to be free, which is what the Bible is. It's the foundation of all systems of law, in the quote-unquote white nations, if you will, right? So it was even said to be part of the common law of Pennsylvania, and the Philadelphians were bad people in the Bible. That's why they called it Philadelphia. So you got to understand, this guy was looking for that Bible so he could use it to control people like the church and the state. He wasn't looking right at it to and the other, the good guy, was trying to he had a copy of the Bible, but he was trying to bring it to some place where they could print it and distribute it so that people could learn once again how to govern themselves, because all that knowledge was gone. So if it falls into the wrong hands, which of course it did, the kings and the popes and all that, and they restrict the knowledge from the people who, for the most part in history, were always illiterate, certainly could not speak the Latin, the priest language, right? Well, then you've got a tool. If you know what makes people free and those people don't, you're going to hold that over them, right? So the Jew, which I'm saying is these people, the royal bloodlines, the people in power, those who've fallen, you know, those Babylonians, basically, who have created this secular system and just utterly ruined religious freedom, they're using the Bible against us by keeping it from us, by translating it into what's called dog Latin, or the English language, the Latin grammatical set to the English language, so that we can never actually understand what the Bible says, and that's our problem. We suffer from a lack of knowledge because we can't get the knowledge, unless you do what I do, which is sit here all day, all night, till 3 a.m, looking at every single word to see what it means, which is why I wrote my book, you know, so... That's the power. The power is to have knowledge and keep it from other people. And the Bible is a book of knowledge. It was a book of truth told in a metaphorical, allegorical stories, which every culture in the world does. You know, every culture has mythical stories to teach moral law and moral, you know, moral way of life. So it shouldn't be a surprise that the Bible is also metaphorical in almost every way.
So what about pre-biblical times? Do you what's your take on the history of man? How old is man? How old has man been on the earth?
Well,
that would be
sophism. That would be a mentality where I claim to have godlike knowledge. I would never do so. So the best answer I can give you is I don't know, and I never will know.
And things just are going to remain a mystery.
Why do
All right,
well,
right on that, what is your take on...
Plus, you mentioned time. I don't believe in pre- or post-biblical times. I believe that the Bible is timeless. The story itself is timeless. It does not need to be put into man's or the Roman history timeline, which is, of course, different than the Jewish timeline. Very different, and it's used to control us. Again, I don't believe in time as a construct created by man. I don't believe there were biblical times as much as there are only biblical times in all time. Does that make sense?
It That's a tough concept, but I think that if you look at the history that they're trying to hide from us, that we've been around for a long time, that man's been around for a long time. I mean, there's lots of evidence that we've had technology that is equal to or greater than what we've had right now before. It seems like it's the rise and fall of mankind. Every time we start to get knowledge, every time an apocalypse comes along,
and that's the point,
they wipe us out again, and they keep the knowledge. They go underground or go somewhere, and they keep the knowledge, and then
and that's the trick, isn't it? Because that's what he was trying to do in the movie. He was trying to reorganize culture under his purview and with his interpretation of biblical things, the knowledge that he would keep from everybody else to create a new society that ultimately would have to go through the same cyclical nature. That's why, you know, the notion of revolution, think about a revolution. What is a revolution? A revolution is something that happens again. It revolves. It keeps coming and going and going and coming and coming and going, right? You don't want a revolution. You want change. You want to go back to nature where there is no change, where there is no revolution. There's no need for it because you're not respecting lies and powerful men, the titles, the flattering titles, the persons, the status. That's what you have to do. But
so right on that prefix of re, what's your take on reincarnation?
I don't have a take on reincarnation, honestly. I think it's a fascinating story. But I don't know. And if you're not saying I don't know to things that aren't self-evident, then you've got a problem. That's why I say don't bring faith-based arguments or beliefs. If you don't know, you don't know. And if you believe something that you don't know that is not self-evident, then there's a problem. And God, Jehovah, is defined in all the concordances, all the writings I've ever found, all the dictionaries, everything. God, Jehovah is defined as that which is self-evident, the truth, the universe, nature itself, that it, including us. So for me to say I believe or I don't believe in Jehovah or God is saying I don't believe in existence. It's like it's a ridiculous notion, atheism and stuff. If you don't know the meaning of the word, and I'm not saying, keep in mind that I'm saying that was the intention of the authors of the Bible. If you want to believe something else, that's fine. I'm talking about the Bible itself and what the authors of the Bible considered as God, the highest form of the word, the sovereign of the universe, basically. And it was the universe itself. Creation and the creator are the same, in other words. But the church must separate those two things and make God not part of nature, somehow outside of nature, outside of the universe, which actually makes no sense. See, okay. That's how you control people, is that you separate, not only separate God from the universe, which is the definition of Jehovah, but you separate man from nature. Because nature is God.
What's your email? I've probably taken enough of your time on here.
Sure, temporary insanity. Actually, Clint at Strawman Story is easier. Clint at strawmanstory.com.
I'll get back in touch with you. Good talking to you.
Sounds good, man. Thanks. Again, I'm really trying not to give my opinion in all of this, and I remind you that when I talk, I'm really strictly speaking in terms of intention of the authors of these things. So again, if I'm talking about legal law, I'm going to speak from the intention of the authors of legal law, i.e. I'm going to play the devil, the devil's advocate. If I'm speaking about the Bible, I'm going to speak from the intention of the writers of the Bible. And in my opinion, the Bible in its present form and translation is specifically, in my understanding, is specifically and 100% opposed to the legal system, the legal law of man, God's law and man's law. So when I look at these two things, that's how I think of them. They are completely diametrically opposed, and I'm going to speak from that disposition, that perspective. I don't want you to think that anything I'm saying is my opinion. is not my opinion that Jehovah is the universe. That's how it's defined and was intended so that when you read the Bible, you can understand what the hell is going on, what they're talking about. When they say, and that Jesus Christ is the law of God, personified, anthropomorphized into a man, so that, I mean, they're not gonna make Jesus Christ, for instance, into a horse or a skunk. How do you follow a skunk? You can't speak, right? It's not part of man's world. It's not able to be a part of the law, so it would be irrelevant. So, of course, Jesus Christ is a man, because that's what you're supposed to follow, because it's you. And that's so important to understand. That is the intent of the authors of the Bible, and that is the intent of the old Indian stories. That is the intent of the Greek mythology and the Roman mythology. They all have a purposeful meaning. And if you start putting your own meaning to things, especially to the legal system, if you say that you know what a legal word means and you don't, you're going to make a mistake and it's going to come back to bite you on the ass. And if you don't know the name of God and the meaning of that name, well, then the Bible is useless to you. If you're externalizing God from nature, it's worthless to you because you can't, it's the foundation of everything, the foundation of law. Let's go to Alan. Alan in North Dakota. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Glenn. I guess, the previous caller, I guess you don't have a radio show anymore.
No, I'm full time, delving into all this other stuff, so.
Okay. And, where in the Bible does it reference, pharmacopoeia as you spoke of earlier?
It's the word, it says, I'm going from memory here. The great men will conquer the nations through sorcery. If you look up the word sorcery, mm-hmm. is a translation, from the word pharmacopoeia, in the Greek, I believe it is, or the Latin. So, when it says they will use sorcery against you, that it actually says pharmacopoeia, drugs, etc. And it says great men, or it means powerful men, men of power. So if you look up the word sorcery.
So the word pharmacopoeia is not in the Bible.
All right. Well, I'll look it up real quick if you want.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. Let me, find it here. What else you got to say while I do this?
That was my
it's important
question.
You know.
Is pharmacopoeia in Strong's Concordance?
Okay, but there was a certain man called Simon. This is Acts 8:9. There's a certain man called Simon, which before in the same city used sorcery and bewitched the people of Samaria, giving out that himself was some great one. Let me see if that's the right word. Called Simon, sorcery, no, that's not it. Sorry. To practice magic, to use sorcery. Come on, I gotta find it. Sorry. Sorcery. I thought it was sorcery. Maybe I'm wrong. I can go into my book actually and find it. If what else you got to say, and I'll do that in background.
Well, that was basically it. I'm just intrigued by the word pharmacopoeia.
Yeah, it's
we are being drugged to death, literally.
Absolutely, and that's why it's so important to know what these words mean, because they are warnings. They are not from a certain time. They are, again, all times. They're warnings of what will happen if you, let all this crap, that's happening to us happen. So let me see. Oh, it's so important. I want to find it. Hang on. Pharmacology, so the caduceus, which is the doctor's symbol, Mercury's rod, and twisted by two serpents. come on. I know it's in here. Okay, there it is. Ancient language of the Bible, Strong's G5332 is pharmakeus, K-E-U-S, means drug, a spell-giving potion. And, let's see, one who prepares or uses magical remedies, which is referring to, of course, drugs, because, and, G5332, pharmakia.
Are you referencing, Strong's Concordance when you say
Strong's Concordance, yeah. Medication, pharmacy, pharmakia, by extension, magic. Now, when you look up witchcraft, you're gonna find the word doctor in the etymology as well. So pharmakia refers to the use of or administration of drugs, poisoning, and all medicine is poison, by the way, from pharmacies. Sorcery, magical arts, connection with idolatry and fostered by it. A metaphor, the deceptions and seductions of idolatry, is the Strong's Concordance. And I will find the Bible verse that's from when we come back. Stay tuned.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
Alrighty, folks. To change the bad to good. Well, we were warned we would start worshiping bad things as good and good things as bad. It's all in there, man. That's what we're doing. Here's your verse that we've been trying to find. It's actually Revelation, which of course is, one could argue that we're in that part of the warning right now where all the shit is about to hit the fan. And, here's what it says. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee now. Am I supposed to believe that I am on fire because I'm a wax candle, or should I take the metaphor as the rest of the Bible is metaphoric? And the light of the candle shall shine no more in thee, for thy merchants were the great men of the earth. In other words, the businessmen, the government. For by thy sorceries, G55331, meaning pharmakia, by thy sorceries were all nations deceived, and in her was found the blood of prophets, of saints, and of all that were slain upon the earth. In other words, us. We were found within the nations, and we are the ones being, basically sorcerized, if that's a word, by pharmakia. We're the ones that are taking what the merchants, the great men of the earth, great doesn't mean great, it means powerful, because we give them power and we support them and we buy their drugs and we trust doctors, which we shouldn't, pharmakia. We will be deceived by pharmakia. Now, why does it say that? Well, again, pharmakia is magical remedies or a sorcerer. What does that come from? And there again, we have our answer when we go to the etymology of the word physician. Physician, an enchanter, one who speaks magic words, a healer, a physician. That's from the Old English and the Old Danish. One skilled in the magical arts, a leech. If you look up leech, it goes to doctor or physician because that's how they used to treat people. Here, let me put a frickin' leech on you to suck out your blood. Then they started bloodletting, and that's the physician. That's the doctor. One who counsels, a charmer, an exorcist. A physician, a doctor, originally a conjurer in sub-Croatian and the old Slavonic, one who enchants or conjures, a doctor, a sorcerer from the Serbo-Croatian, a fortune teller. Only a leech was usually applied to the veterinary practices, but you get the point. This is the word doctor and physician and enchanter and magician and physician and conjurer and poisoner and sorcerer are all the same thing. The problem is we've been tricked into believing that the medical profession as it stands today is not based on this same ancient concept. And that's why you had the mental health industry. That's why you have psychiatrists creating diseases and thus pharmaceutical companies creating and patenting drugs. Drugs no good unless you can patent it because you can't charge all kinds of money. So we will be deceived and destroyed by pharmacopoeia, which again is sorcery prescribed by enchanters, in other words, physicians. So does that answer your question?
Chapter
in
Revelation, was it?
Oh, let me go back down. Hang on a second. Revelation. Shoot, where are you? Revelation 18, 23 through 24. And that's not the only place that is used, by the way.
Okay. Well, very good, Clay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you challenging me because it refreshes my memory. Thanks, my friend.
Take care. Bye.
You too. All right. Looks like we got one more call here. Bill. Bill in the RBN hometown, Austin.
Yes, hello, my friend. How are you today? Hope you're doing well.
I'm great. I'm happy to be talking again on the live on the air.
We're glad you're back on the air teaching the masses once again.
Appreciate it.
Great question. I don't know if you've done much research on, you've spoken of the private and the public people, and have you done much work regarding the state citizen and the U.S. United States citizen, the difference in the two?
Yeah, I have all the court cases and all the things that explain exactly what the difference is and what that means. Which part of it is in my first book and part of it will be in my second book, which I don't know when I'll finish. But, yeah, essentially it's the difference between being public and private. A public U.S. citizen is a citizen of the district, which is a jurisdiction basically that extends over the states. And the state, what we call a state citizen, you got to understand there was no such thing as a citizen necessarily back in the before the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment was created, well, it was created with bad intent, but it was really created to give black people, the former slaves, a status in society, and I'll expound on that in a minute here. Hold on. We'll be back.
Starts with you and me. Starts with you and me. We all can be heroes. If we take the lead.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. So, in answer to this question, about citizenship, the notion of the difference between private and public or state, the states are the people, where the word people means state, and then there's the nation, which literally is defined as Gentile or Goyim or heathen or pagan. If you're part of the nation, means you're not governing yourself in private or under private law. And it's very important to understand there was no citizenship of the United States, because if that were true, you know how the Constitution says you must be a natural born citizen to be president of the United States. Well, that would mean that George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, Andrew Jackson, John Quincy Adams, William Henry Harrison, Martin Van Buren, and Zachary Taylor would not be able to be president because they weren't born in the United States. They were English citizens, right? So the whole concept of citizenship was something that came later, and there were, you know, these are the people. They are the bloodlines, direct descendants of the kings of England who came over here in the corporate charters under the crown and started the United States. I don't believe the stories of the revolution. I don't believe that we ever really separated. It's all crap to me. These are the Freemasons that basically started this whole thing. And you got to understand that citizenship was not really defined in any way until the 14th Amendment, which gave black persons, and black doesn't mean skin color. It means people who have tainted or not pure blood, according to their genealogy, not in reality, but according to their genealogy. In other words, they're not the race of white people as defined in law, which doesn't refer to skin color, it refers to blood. That's very important to distinguish, because when you have blood right, it's very different than having a legal right, which means you don't have any recognition of blood. So what is natural and what is unnatural? That's, again, the legal versus the natural. That is what is called the right to bear arms. It is not guns. It is actually heraldry. That's why arms is capitalized, which signifies a specific kind of arms in the Second Amendment, because the only way for the people to protect themselves as private people was the right to bear their family bloodline. And that's a big, big thing that they, again, trick us with. Oh, it's guns, 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 guns. No, it's because you're not bearing your arms, your heraldry, your bloodline. That's your problem. And you've accepted legal rights. You've accepted the lowest form of citizenship, so which was given to all the freed slaves. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't leave it open for contract, which is where the birth certificate idea came from, which was to basically, as Caesar did, tax all the common people. He, you know, by registering them, you can't tax anybody unless they're a registered lower class citizen. And therefore, the 14th Amendment citizenship that was created was left open to anybody foolish enough to put their children into it or join it themselves. That is where national citizenship comes from, is this sort of recreation of, you know, the Constitution of the United States was ratified on June 21st, 1788. Until that point, there was no United States of America, and these guys, again, were, you know, they were from England. They had technically dual citizenship the whole time, if you want to call it that. But yeah, if you read court cases, they say, you know, there was no real distinction of citizenship. There was only this notion of being naturally born. But the people who started this country couldn't claim to be natural born. So citizenship was not really a requirement in that respect, because then nobody it would mean the next born baby would have to be president, because it's the only natural born person in the nation, right? So the notion of being private, never entering into the United States, is a default state for people that are naturally born into the states. But the nation, the United States, is a district in Washington, D.C. It is not part of the 50 states, and therefore it is a public thing, like basically being on a monopoly board where you never touch the land, as opposed to the private people who are the land owners. And one of the fallacies that's in the Truth, Patriot, whatever movement, the movement that doesn't ever move, is that you can have a lodeal title. Well, that's not true. The state, the people, the private people, which are represented by Congress and who rule over us, have a lodeal title, and they grant perfect title, which used to be called fee or fee simple, to people, but you can never actually have a lodeal title, because that belongs to the corporate structure, the body politic itself. And that's why the private people are still subject to eminent domain, because it's in the benefit of the people and they're part of the people. We're subject to it because we don't own anything. We have no title whatsoever. We're tenants in all cases, renters, but they are actually the landholders. And you know what? I still argue that if you want to make a change in society or in your town, your local town, find out who your landholder is, because I guarantee you someone owns the land that is a private citizen of the state. And if you want to improve things, that's who you're going to have to talk to, or do more than talk. And, you know, that's so essentially the United States was created to protect them from us, if you will.
Yes. It also appears that the right to vote and the right of suffrage are two completely different things. I don't know if you've spoken of that before or not.
Say that again.
The right of a person or someone to vote versus the right of suffrage. In other words, to elect.
Yeah. Well, political office. I made a documentary, actually, on the Electoral College that explains the whole darn thing. And it's on my blog, and it's called NOTA, for president, I believe, is what I called it. NOTA, which means none of the above. And it shows how you don't actually, the voting is called a poll, and you'll see the polls taken on the news channels and stuff, that your vote actually doesn't count, that it's purely an electoral college. Even though the term electoral college is not in the Constitution, the Congress are responsible for electing the president, has nothing to do with the popular vote, except to say that the popular vote, the electors vote the same as the popular vote as a loss in some states, and most states, and of course they put up the two candidates, so it doesn't matter who gets elected. But we don't elect, because the term elect means the upper class, and we are the lower class, so we only get to vote, and a vote is a prayer to God. It's a prayer to your God, your higher, whoever's in higher power than you. So to vote is to pray. To elect is to basically pass law, or give law, if you will. So the whole thing's a scam. We've never, ever elected any president as the common people, the people of the United States, people uncapitalized, referring to the common people. And that's in my documentary. It's a little different. I tried to do something a little different, but it's called NOTA for President in 2000. I don't know. I don't remember the title, and it's on my blog and it's on YouTube, but it explains the whole thing.
Do you think there are many people in this country that are electors versus the people that are just voters?
Well, Congress is the elector. However, there's a law that says Congress cannot elect. They have to assign an electorate body. So for every congressman, how does that work? By the Electoral College, the congressman of that state, I think it's the senators? I can't remember the details, but Congress, because they can't actually elect the president, because that would be a conflict of interest, they assign who the electors are going to be, and of course, who assigns it, but the political parties that we're fool enough to be members of or respect, which have nothing to do with us at all, but we participate in the Democrat or Republic, and we pretend that we vote, and they make a big media spectacle spending billions of dollars to make us think that we're actually voting for president, when the whole time Congress elects the electors or votes for the electors through the political parties, and those electors who, in my opinion, I won't say it's a sure thing, are probably private people who are in some kind of trust situation, so participating in the United States, but not in it. So Congress elects the electors. The electors are responsible for putting the president in, and the popular vote is taken into consideration, but it's still just a prayer. We're praying to them, just like we pray or plead to a judge in court, because the judge is our magistrate, i.e., the definition of God is a magistrate. So we don't elect the president, is my point. We have nothing to do with the election of the president, except that it fools us into thinking, basically, and Baudrillard from Simulation and Simulacrum, Simulacrum and Simulation, the book that The Matrix was based on, he makes a really good point. He says, look, an election in the United States especially is basically the same thing as an assassination. It's not an assassination, but it's a mock assassination, because every 4 years, all the Democrats are going to talk about is replacing or impeaching Donald Trump with one of their candidates. And when that candidate gets in, all the Republicans are going to talk about for the next 4 years are replacing, right? So it's a mock assassination. It gives you a sense of accomplishment. It gives you a sense of participation, as if you actually were responsible for voting, and that's the whole point, is to keep you stupid.
It's the Coliseum, isn't it?
Oh yeah, big blood sport, right?
Well, thank you for your time, Clint. It's very interesting, a lot of knowledge you're imparting to us. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. My old buddy, Chris, he's now near Las Vegas. Good on you, man. You're not in it, because Las Vegas is a fiction. Hi, Chris.
Correct. Well, hello there, Man, it's glad to hear you back on the show here for Deanna today. I had a couple of, I think, salient ideas that you may give some credence to. One, the word term citizen, that my research and study has revealed to me, comes from the ancient Roman law, Justinian's Code, and from city and denizen. And yes, considering that all people in the city are merchants or mercants, haunted by mercenaries, as it were, in Justinian's world, they're all effectually serfs or slaves of the city, and therefore citizen is a severely diminished capacity in my estimation.
Yes. Page 466 of my book, denizen is a resident.
Yeah.
So, right, right. So a resident is not in domicile. A resident is there temporarily, and, you know, and it's defined in William C. Anderson's 1889 dictionary as an alien. So we're all aliens. An alien born who has obtained ex donati, I can't say it, Regis, letters patent to make him a subject. So I'm an alien born, and because I'm born in California on a military base, in my case, that's now closed, I am a foreign, because I'm United States, I'm not in the state, and I'm not born from someone who is in the state, or a United States citizen, which means they're a foreigner, right? So I'm a letters patent subject. In other words, I'm property. The crown denizes, parliament consents to naturalization. And this is the important part. A denizen is in a kind of middle state between an alien and a natural born subject, because natural born subjects are only in the states, and partakes of both. So you have some state law and some federal law. Federal law always trumps state law in our case, and the states cannot actually defend you or help you or protect you according to law from the federal law, because you're not a private state citizen. He may take lands by purchase or devise, but not by inheritance. In other words, a U.S. citizen, a denizen, has no blood right of inheritance, which is why you need a will, because the will of God is not your right. The bloodline has been broken. You're in attainder, right? Corruption of blood. So you cannot claim blood inheritance. You have to go, you have to be willed something, a legal document. For the parent has no inheritable blood is what it says. In the South Carolina, the status seems to have been created by law. So a denizen is something created by law. In other words, it doesn't exist. It's just a fiction. But if you agree that you are that fiction in that fraud, and that the fraudulent leaders are your masters, well then guess what? Your blood is corrupted and you're a U.S. citizen.
Well, I can't argue with there. I think that legalized heavy on the lie part construct is a rather perverse interpretation. Although I do note that the etymology, in my estimation, of the word term resident, which I think is a very dangerous word term, race and law, as we know, is the thing. ID, I think, is an abbreviation for identified. ENT, an entity, a dead corporate fictitious entity, a corporate trade, nom de guerre, named for war. They commit war against us without our knowledge. And I also...
And the pen is mightier than the sword, ain't it?
The S word, Satan's word, I agree with you strongly. Another aspect I think is salient is that it appears to me that when you vote, as opposed to being a qualified elector that's provided for in the constitutional language, for freeholder men who actually own land as fee simple, absolute, avoidable title, which does still exist. I have two grants of land made patent myself. I'm a steward or a conservator of the lands in ad infinitum, and hereditary rights of perpetuity. So that does still exist for those who have the diligence to study and learn about it. But it's
well, I'd appreciate if you'd send me or get in touch with me, and let's talk about that, because that's one of the things I've been studying and still don't fully quite understand, but it's getting there.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to help you out if I can. And, you know, we all are working together to free people and be absolute abolitionist if we can. So I'm glad to help out. the aspect that I was trying to get to is that 14th Amendment, small c, federal created citizenship subject to the plenary dictatorial powers of Congress, as it were. It seems to me that whenever you sign up to vote, as opposed to being a qualified elector, you're basically transmitting a proxy vote to some other
yes.
party agency or representative, if you will. And
in my documentary, I have I think it's the governor or someone from the state, I think North or South Carolina, and she actually says that in the video. She says, when you vote this November, you're actually voting for the electors, not the president of the United States. She says that outright. Hey, Chris, hold on, man. We'll be right back. Alrighty, folks, welcome back. We've got a little short segment here, and of course, time, the construct of time is always, too quick. I apologize to Davey. Probably not get to your call. I'll try to get Tom in here real quick. Chris, any last words, my friend?
Of course, they probably have great points to bring, but I thank you so much for your hard work and diligence. God bless you, Mr. Clint.
Thank you, Chris. Like I said, get in touch with me about that information, would you? Everybody has a puzzle piece. Thanks, Chris. All right, let's go to Tom in Utah. Utah? Where are you from, Tom?
Clint, if you'll just look out your north window, you'll see me doing the blowfish on my south window.
Okay.
You know, I'm in Bountiful, just up the road.
Ah, gotcha.
Anyway, I have an answer for why we don't have a patriot movement. It's because of Celebrex, OxyContin, and all of the other opiates that have interfered with peristalsis.
Absolutely, and that's what my movie is actually about. You'd be shocked at how true that statement is, and not just those drugs, but everything that breaks the blood-brain barrier, essentially. And that's, you know, not just injections, but pills and patches and everything that, it's amazing. It truly is amazing. We've been destroyed by pharmacopoeia.
Well, you know, I used to be part of that profession or that game. And in the mid-70s, I used to be a drug pusher.
Yeah.
Used to be a drug producer, used to be a drug, prescriber. But in the mid-70s, I began to feel like that there was a whole spirit change in medicine. Prior to that, when I worked at LBS in primary and Holy Cross and, you know, a couple of the other, when you're in pharmacy, not pharmacy, but when you're in pathology, you get shipped around a little bit to where their need is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we saw that change from evidence-based medicine to symptom-based treatment.
Yeah, faith-based medicine.
But anyway, since you're acquainted with Latin, the word vaccine is such a cute word.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Vaca.
Okay, break it apart. The first part is vac or vaca, vaca. Okay,
cow.
What is the word scene? C-I-N-E. You have your Latin dictionary right there?
I don't, actually. Hurry, because we're out of time.
Okay, but anyway, when you get a chance, would you please go to gassyamerica.com, go to my phone number. Also, go to meadowsfire.com. It's a little case I'm involved with here with judicial misconduct up in Davis County.
Is there anything, is there any case where there is not judicial misconduct?
I thought I would shock you and tell you there's a judicial misconduct here in Utah.
Well,
I know it's hard to believe.
I don't think there is a judicial conduct, is my point. I think the whole thing's a scam, basically. It's all administrative. There's no courts, no judges. They're not real. They're commercial. They're not actually dealing with law in the traditional sense of the word. But anyway, I appreciate your call.
Would you go to gassyamerica.com and call me?
Sure.
Please.
Sure,
you know, I was assaulted and blinded in D.C. as a whistleblower.
Oh, yeah, I know your story, man.
Okay,
we're out
good.
Of time, folks. I apologize for not getting my last caller, Davey. Yeah, thanks for listening and putting up with my crap today. Deanna will be back next week.
That's not crap.
And stay tuned. RBN continues day and night. Take care, folks.
Thanks.